Welcome, listeners. It's Rack Addicts After Hours time yet again. Episode 40, campfire edition, I think. We don't actually have a campfire, but we do have some logs, multiple musicians sitting in a circle outside next to a forest, and Luke's actually sitting on a cajon. Can you give us a quick little demo, perhaps? There you go. Real musical instruments. That makes a change, I think. Yes, so nature. We've got our friends back. We've got Luke, we've got Telmo, we've got Pete, and I'm Ben, of course. So thank you for tuning in. It's weekly update time. I'm actually going to stick mine at the end of the podcast because it ties in with my YouTube recommendation. But Telmo, what have you been up to?
Well, a week has passed since we last did a podcast. Did an episode. So I haven't done much during the week apart from working. Today was quite a nice day, to be fair. I had a day off with a girlfriend, and we decided to go to the Kew Gardens just past Richmond in Kew. Beautiful stuff. Spent the whole day walking, bird watching. I totally recommend you, if you guys are around or living around the area, thinking about going to spend some quality nature time during this lovely time of the season, do go there. It's super fun. You've got plans from all over the world. If you're someone that's really interested in just nature in general, there's some really interesting birds as well.
Is it an RHS garden, that one?
It might be. It's the Queen's Garden. So that's officially the Queen's, zoo.
The Queen's Back Garden Zoo.
That's right. I had a really good time. I've been working on music still at home. Found myself a couple of days ago just feeling a bit of a... just going on a loop, really, in one of the songs. And, I just... don't really know what to do when you have too many sections and how to interconnect the sections.
Split them apart, make them into different songs.
Probably that maybe. could be a good shout. I just want to ask if any of our listeners, if they have any idea of how to get out of that loop, please do get in touch with us.
Drop it on the Facebooks.
Yeah, I do need some help.
Before you drive yourself insane.
Insane.
Luke, what about you? What have you been up to?
Well, mostly I've been getting ready to start recording again. We're starting to work out a way to, perhaps get back into our studio in such a way as there's only going to need to be one or two people there, particularly with drums. Obviously, only I need to be behind the kit. Mm. So I've been deep in the internet looking for new snare drums.
Ah.
Because I don't know what to go for. Yeah, I've got a decent Pearl 14x5.5 Maple Masters snare, which is a lovely snare, and it'll do a range of sounds, but I've just been listening to a lot of people like Lettuce.
There's a band called Lettuce.
Yes.
Lovely.
Yes. They're amazing.
Yeah.
And I want something big and deep and rude,
Yeah.
And I can't decide what to go for. I've been looking at all sorts of things like Tama Starphonics. I've been looking at Ludwigs, but Ludwigs, I don't know if I've got Ludwig penny change lying around at the moment. But also, I used to have a big brass World Max snare. World Max used to make shells for Ludwig a long time ago, and they still make decent brass snares. So I'm thinking about going for one of those again. They're not too much money, but they're very nice for the way that,
Is it the shallow ones that you're looking for? Because I've heard that the bigger, obviously the snare, and not in terms of diameter, but in terms of shallowness, the bigger the sound it will be as well.
So I've got
big band and stuff.
Exactly. So I've got a 5.5 at the moment, 14x5.5, which is, it's an all-rounder. It will do everything. And you can certainly tune that very nicely. In fact, this is something I want to mention in my YouTube recommendation later on. The bigger it is, the more it will suit a lower tuning and a big, deep, powerful sound.
Do you normally go, I'd like this kind of sound first, and that will guide your choice of drum, rather than the guitar world that I'm familiar with, shiny pedal, interesting thing, I could do something with that.
There's certainly an element of both of those. When it comes to cymbals and percussion, I'm kind of I'll find a use for that. I want it.
What a fun noise, let's add it.
Exactly. But when it comes to snare drums, I start off with, I really want something that's going to give me that whoomph, that a good... nice deep and low snare thud sound. Someone described it on YouTube as the sound of a baseball bat going through a wedding cake. That kind of real sort of dry boof.
Brilliant.
Got to get that. So that's the one I want.
Baseball bat through a wedding cake.
Yeah. That's been my week, really, just kind of reading snare drum things.
Yeah.
So yeah.
How well do you find reviews and things translate to actually hearing the thing in person.
Mm, not well.
Not at all.
No, with drums, it's tuning and it's microphoning, miking. It's the room, it's the player, it's the head, the wires, all sorts of things. So, I mean, I'm sure that's the same is true of any instrument, but yeah, it's a little bit harder to kind of pick an acoustic instrument based on individual reviews. But I kind of know what I'm looking for because obviously having worked in a drum shop for quite a while, I have a good idea of what will work. So,
nice. Are you enjoying the freedom of just being able to choose stuff for yourself instead of some customer being like, yeah, I want to get this kind of sound. Can you help me out? I think I need a whole entire new kit.
Well, I think so. But now I'm that person.
Oh no!
So I'm kind of doing it to myself. I don't really need a new snare drum. Like I said, my Pearl is fairly versatile. But
your internal monologue, right? I have a budget of this is the kind of genre I play.
Yeah, and I kind of keep looking at big brass snares and going, yeah. So we'll see.
Nice one. Well, let us know when the journey comes to an end. Mm. Pete, what have you been up to this week?
I've been repairing a colleague's monologue.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm to it. It's not too dead.
It's dead.
Totally dead.
Totally dead. He believes that possibly some water might have entered the keyboard.
Water-based, potentially alcoholic beverage?
I did interrogate him on that subject because water generally is not too much of a problem, you know, as long as you don't power the thing on while it's got the water inside. So apparently the water entered actually where the keyboard is and there isn't any electronics in that place. So I'm not quite sure what's gone on. But anyway, the thing is dead. I've checked the external AC, so we're down to the prime motherboard. So I have informed him that I'm going to attempt to repair it, but I've got a backup plan. I've already spoken to Cork and got price and availability of the motherboard, which I've relayed to him as well. So he's saying, this is plan A. If it doesn't work, plan B, this is how much the motherboard is.
So they'd actually sell just a punter or a spare?
Yeah, I mean, there was a form on the site. I just filled it out and they responded, I think, the same day.
Not bad.
It's sort of Korg UK.
That's totally out of character for Korg. What's going on?
Well, having said that, I did have a kind of very good conversation with Korg yesterday on a different subject, and they were very helpful. Hmm. Put me straight on a few things to do with the wave stay.
nice one.
On that note, something I forgot to mention, actually. I will have my first piano student from next week onwards.
Oh, nice.
So that has been officially decided today, which I'm really looking forward to. To start teaching some lovely pop songs to the world.
Nice one. So just piano stuff or piano music theory?
Both.
Yeah.
Well, it's a level 3 student. It's 12 years old. So we're going to start see where basically wants to take his playing and see what sort of stuff he wants to develop. I don't think it's going to be basically learning just regular exam pieces. It will be just more really having fun playing tunes.
I always found exams took the fun out of life anyway.
They do. Sorry.
Right, let's jump into our first newsworthy topic. The Arturia Keystep has always been close to the heart of the synth enthusiast. There's a new one which sandwiches directly between the original Keystep and the Keystep Pro, which is kind of a hybrid of the Beatstep Pro and a regular Keystep. This is quite cool, and I would be tempted if they'd already announced the black one, because they will do a black one at some point. Even if you ask them, they say, no, we're not going to do a black one. They will at some point. And I'm kind of tempted, to be honest. So yeah, a few more keys, still the same slim ones, but that strum thing, that's really nice. So you've got 4 potentiometers sort of in the middle of the device, and you play a chord, and when you have strum activated, it will just automatically do a single sort of arpeggiation through the notes. It can go up or down. You can sort of set the speed, and it was really playable. Obviously, I saw the Mylar Melodies video, which is always a good one. But Keystep's always been a great sequencer design. It's an interesting addition, I reckon. What do you think?
I'm not really sure. I mean, it's always problematic when you've already got the predecessor. Then you think,
bit annoying.
Oh,
yep.
You know, one, my one has just lost a load of value, possibly.
Yep.
And two, do I need one of these, or can I stick with it? Yes, it's got some attractive features, I have to say. I wasn't sure when was this actually. When was it announced? Because it kind
days
of snuck
ago.
On me.
Yeah, like a couple
so
of days ago.
So it really literally came out of nowhere.
Yeah. So we were told about it at work. I think it was just announced via reviewers and people putting videos up. So I saw Sleep My Love Melodies one, Alex Theakston, and the Sonic State.
Yeah.
Just saw those.
I mean, they
on,
all sort
the
of
feed.
Popped up about the same time. So yeah. There was obviously an embargo, and then suddenly, yeah. Right, you guys, you can talk about it. So
exactly.
Because you don't know really quite when they recorded those videos.
Who knows? Could be a couple of months ago. I mean, I know they probably sent pre-production ones. So
but they didn't announce it at the same time as the Pro.
No, they definitely didn't.
So they just this one just snuck out.
Mm. Yeah, there is definitely going to be another exciting announcement from Archeria, but we don't have a date on that one, do we, yet?
No.
No, that's going to be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's not too many differences. I mean, it's just that strum mode, and actually the way they've implemented having four banks of four CC kind of knobs going looks pretty cool. So yeah, if you don't have a key step already, it's probably a good option. It depends up to the person how tempting the swap out might be. Ooh, while I think about it, a dude on the Subharmonicon and Spectravox Facebook group had a little video on how the CCs work for the sub-octave kind of control on the Subharmonicon. So that got a little idea cooking in the brain. Could use, or dig into the CC sequencing. CC sequencing, say that seven times speedily, on the Digitac to try and get some more interesting chord progressions going. You dug into that once, and it drove you a bit mad, didn't it? CCs on a
Digitac.
On
the Digitac, yes. Mm. I mean, it all made sense, but it was a bit of a struggle.
Yeah.
As I say, I haven't really been playing with that setup recently, and I'm contemplating it. You possibly know I've been contemplating maybe substituting the 1010 black box. Mm.
It will certainly cut down the size of that whole setup.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those things that's a lot smaller when you actually get one in the flesh.
Yeah, it's like a couple of sort of business cards stacked onto each other and then
but
thickened.
But torn, it could be the MPC-1.
Oh, yeah.
That's another option, sure. But that's bigger. That's going the other way.
Or could it be a Native Instruments Machine Plus?
Yes.
That's the smoothest segue we've ever had. Lovely stuff. Yeah, well, I'm not particularly a machine or machiner, as they like you to call it, guy. But, you know, it looks nice. It's all aluminium construction now. And I've been a big fan of the push every time I've used one. Not that I really know how they work, but... No, it looks kind of nice.
But look at that price.
Whoa! Yeah, I didn't know it was that bad. Oh, God.
Yeah, it's quite expensive. I mean, it looks like it's an opportunity for people that are used to using the Native Instruments machine to kind of get the visuals that you would get from, as you mentioned, the Ableton push and stuff like that, and the MPC as well.
Go doorless, potentially.
Do you think so? Do you think that you...
Well, yeah, that's the idea. It's standalone, so you don't need a computer. I don't know kind of expanded the options will be if you do connect a computer. Probably more options for sample libraries and instruments and such. But just from kind of skimming the specs, it did seem reasonably capable on its own. I mean, you can just run Massive on it, which I think is really cool.
So the software is all included, obviously, if you use a DAW to go with it. But you can use it as a standalone mode.
Yeah, well, kind of familiar stuff if you're a Native Instruments kind of person. Massive, Monarch, FM8, Reactor, the Contact Factory selection, all that kind of stuff, as far as I'm aware, should run on it.
I'm not seeing no battery, then.
I'm not sure. If it's kind of the same size as the regular machine at the moment, there's not going to be a massive
battery
space.
Is a virtual player anyway. It's the virtual version of this in some respects.
Oh, you were talking about not batteries, the bloody plug-in battery.
No, the actual
mine going off in completely the wrong direction. No, it doesn't look like it.
But it's most probably irrelevant because, I mean, it's the physical embodiment of something like that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
With that in mind, though, I mean, I'm a caveman when it comes to doors. I really am, but... I think not having a mouse and keyboard would drive me mental.
What do you use if you would have to use a door?
Ableton.
Great. I'm an Ableton dude
Ableton
as well.
Ableton Live, yes. Yes, I will say that with pride.
You can say that with pride,
Ableton
my
Live.
Friend.
hence, yeah. But, and I do use Native because it's good, but crikey. I mean, maybe, I've yet to use one of these things.
Yeah, with some, I suppose, groove boxes is kind of the category we're in. Because of how, like, what kind of buttons you've got laid out, there could be something that on a DAW would be click, move, drag, move, or something that you just press a button on a groove box. So there would definitely be certain efficiencies that if you're really up on how to use the thing, you could have a really, really fast workflow.
Yeah.
It's just really up to the people. There's definitely going to be, there's always going to be limitations on a Groovebox.
Yeah.
Not going to have the power of a fully loaded DAW on your hands, are you? No, they're getting pretty cool. I mean, the Electron stuff's always been super powerful. The MC707 does have some pretty cool guts in there with all of the Roland sound engine things. Anything more beastly as a kind of a Groovebox?
What's that? What's the Polyend? Is it just a controller, that new Polyend?
Oh, no, the tracker. That's sample sequencing, and then sequencer. So not quite Grooveboxy entirely, especially because it's a tracker. The way you interact with it is quite different, and quite niche as well. I suppose a lot of people wouldn't be in for trackers. I certainly don't see the appeal. It's like, oh, we could go back to how MIDI sequencing was originally conceived. It's like, why? What's the point? We've come so far.
Yeah.
So who do you think the target market is? It for live? Is it for DJs? Is it for doorless setups?
On the machine?
Yeah, this Machine Plus.
I think they're trying to get a bit of the MPC market. So anybody that could potentially be an MPC person but really likes Native Instruments things. Potentially they're trying to maybe drag some DJs into being actual musicians. I mean, just doing something else. I'm very sorry, DJs of the world.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think this will be mostly used for producers in studio. I mean, I barely see anyone. I mean, you can use it as a DJ, but
why? If you're using a DAW, why would you need one of these?
Maybe it removes the need to have a laptop on stage.
Because a lot of people don't actually use DAWs when they're recording. They don't like looking at a screen. A lot of people just like being hands-on.
Yeah, I suppose so. There is this DAWless setup kind of movement that's growing quite a lot. But I could definitely see you have this and you haven't have a laptop that could crash.
I would
imagine this is pretty stable.
Especially because it comes with a 64-gigabyte SD card as well. So you can just chuck your tunes in there. And then if you just want anyone to mix it, just send it to someone.
I think actually, to be honest, the hardware rather than a laptop on stage, there's something a bit more reassuring about not having to worry about a laptop.
Yeah.
And if you suddenly it goes for a software update automatically and your entire show is ruined. Actually, there's a brilliant video on YouTube even if you're not into your metal at all. There's a video of Devin Townsend playing somewhere in Spain, potentially, I think, and that catastrophic technical failure with their backing tracks, tempo stuff, and all the kind of the screens, the laptop that was running all of that.
Yeah.
They had to go through multiple reboots. Either way, like, they sort of came on stage going, yeah, metal show, we're starting! And then it's all gone. So, but because Devin Townsend is the ultimate performing man, it's like a 10-minute video of him just entertaining the crowd while he's just killing time. But
so he's just like making jokes and stuff.
Yeah, he's
a man walks into a bar.
he's such a good frontman. It's incredible. Like one bit, it takes so long. He's like, I've run out of ideas, and he just starts playing like Guess That Riff with the crowd and things. It's great fun. You should look it up. There we go. Native Instruments Machine. I don't think we're going to be grabbing
one. Machine Plus.
Machine Plus, of course, Machine Plus. Can't forget the Plus. We're probably not going to have one, but it's interesting, and it is here.
When you say we're not going to have one, when we're going to have some in stock?
Who knows? I mean, personally, I don't think anybody's really going to grab one here.
I thought there was a bit of delay on quite a lot of the Native Instruments hardware. It seemed to be...
Oh, yeah, some of the like S and A series keyboards have been away for ages.
So I'm assuming they've got a lot of these piled up in the wings ready to... Hopefully. Want to be announcing something and then go, we've got this, but you can't have one.
Yeah.
We haven't got them.
I will be quite disappointed if you pick one up and it's just like, the regular Machine Mark III, but they've made it out of metal and stuffed some gubbins behind the scenes.
It's obviously got the sort of two OLED screens with the waveform, but do you think it's got a piano roll in there? I mean, how does it... Mm-hmm. Does it see... I mean... How do you sequence with it?
I mean, I suppose you can play it in the same way that you would do it in an Ableton Push. You could just do different chord sequences in a way that you can, like, go from octaves. I don't know. It could be just chromaticism. I don't know how they do that.
There is piano roll in Machine, the program, and that's basically running that on it.
So I would imagine it must have some way of displaying it.
Yeah. on one of the screens. I mean, it does look just to be a machine Mark III, but made of metal.
Yes.
We'll see.
A few more buttons.
It's time, and I think we're going to have to deploy the first of our custom little jingles. Everybody, it's time for Luke's Spacey Bit. Delicious new little jingle. Take it away, Luke.
Well, here we are in space, as you can tell by our new jingle. So it's a bit of an admin one this week. I wanted to just address some corrections that I needed to make based on some things I missaid last week. In particular, tell me I answered your question completely wrong. So Starship will not be involved in the sort of first part of the Artemis mission. It's going to be a much longer process than we were thinking of. So the November 2021 date refers to an uncrewed test of the SLS system, the Space Launch System, the big orange rocket being developed by, I think it's ULA with NASA, with the Orion space capsule. So that's what's going to be happening in 2021.
Can you remind me what Artemis is? So Artemis. It was last week, I've forgotten.
Yes, it was a long time ago now. So Artemis is the return to the moon trip that NASA are conducting. It's going to be the mission that puts the first woman and the next man on the moon and
taglines.
Indeed, you know, boots on the ground there to stay, all that good patriotic stuff, which, you know, to be fair, it is actually quite exciting. It's going to be the start of hopefully, you know, a moon colony, a moon economy, moon things.
Moon economy.
I think us as humanity, we just need to go forward for just exploration of the actual...
And boldly go where no one has gone before. All that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Boldly go where we were, you know, a while.
Well, yeah. Whoops, I'm giving me conspiracy theorist credit there. Yes, yeah, exactly. You know, boldly go back to where we've been once.
Yeah, man.
And stay this time. So that's exciting. So they're getting to the point where they're running what they call green run tests on the main core of the SLS. So it's not built yet. November 2021, I think, is... I don't know. It's one of those things where I don't know if that date is optimistic. Everything that's been going on in the world at the moment, I think obviously a lot of production facilities have been shut down. A lot of work that would have been carried out hasn't been carried out. So we'll see how feasible that date is, but certainly they seem to be on track. What they're saying in their press releases that they're on track is that they're doing these green run tests on the main core of the SLS, which is this huge stage, this quite large rocket that's going to be as powerful as reportedly the Saturn V in order to get us to the moon and so on. This is where they're kind of putting, you know, custom made software into these, you know, custom made CPUs and PCBs and into a whole new rocket. It's not like, you know, just loading native into a Machine Plus, you know, the new version or whatever. So it's...
Space travel is expensive, folks.
Yes, and difficult. So yeah, that's apparently going well. They're going to have some exorbitant amount of data to analyze from that. I think it was something like a couple of petabytes or something enormous. You know, you're very large figures. Lots of data coming down from that. And they've also completed test firing a solid rocket booster for the system. So that's very exciting. But yeah, essentially Artemis 1 is the mission that's going to launch in November 2021, and it is part of a very long pipeline of a lot of launches that are going to get us back there. Where SpaceX comes into it is the Starship is going to be part of the... they've put a project forward where they asked third parties to submit plans or solutions for landing craft. Because for whatever reason, the Orion spacecraft won't be doing a lot of landing.
Of course, yeah.
It'll just be going to the Gateway station and back and so on. I think the primary sort of modus operandi, I guess, of the Orion spacecraft is to make it back through Earth's atmosphere safely, not so much land on the moon, because it's a very, very heavy lander. It's very big. It's a lot bigger than Apollo was. So, and it's kind of that command module shape as well. It's not really a lander craft at all. But so they're asking SpaceX to send Starship. They're asking Blue Origin and Dynetics to send lander craft.
So
to the
SpaceX are going to make the space bus.
Yes.
That you can catch to the moon.
Yes.
Awesome.
And it will land on the surface. You can go for a walk as long as you keep your ticket. Otherwise, you know, that could get awkward.
They'll leave you there.
For only $80,000, you can go to the moon.
That sounds cheap.
Yeah.
Well, the bus stop's going to be the American flag, isn't it? It's up there.
Yeah. The Sea of Tranquility. That would be a nice tourist destination, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
We're actually, since we're out in the park, we've actually got some bats flying over us, which is pretty cool. Maybe if these microphones are good enough, you might be able to hear them if you have better hearing than we do. Anyway, I heard you mentioned something to do with... mice.
Mm-hmm.
What?
So this is a short segment I wanted to just bring in. It's kind of exciting stuff, but I don't know if it's going to be that exciting.
I've got to drop the Farnsworth. Ewa.
Ewa.
So the space mice were sent to the ISS in December 2019, and essentially they're part of a test to try and understand how we can get around the damage that space does to our bones and sort of skeleton, the musculoskeletal system, if you will. So what they did was they took 40 mice, 24 of them are completely normal, they are control mice, and the other 8 were missing myostatin, which is a gene that they've taken out of the mice's DNA, which inhibits muscle and bone growth. And the idea being that once they get up there, a further 8 of them were given that, and also another suppressant drug which stops something called Activin A. I don't know what that is. Apparently it's very important to muscle growth. Has a similar expression to myostatin. So they removed those, and they said, well, we'll put these mice up there, we'll put them under conditions where astronauts are going to lose bone and muscle mass, and the good news is that the 24 of them did lose the mass. The other 8, or the other 16 that were edited, didn't. In fact, they're twice as strong as normal mice. So they continue growing while they're in space, which is interesting. I don't know how well this is going to apply to humans, because they say in the article themselves, you can't just start messing around with people's, you know, genes in terms
of... because we're not mice.
You have to have some pretty advanced clearance, and you've definitely got to ask nicely.
Mm. And then what happens when you get back to Earth? Do you just keep growing?
Yeah, that'd be interesting. What would...
So I don't think this is going to directly inform anything, but...
You might not want to mention that to actually fitness people, because they might go a bit bonkers with that.
Yeah, it would absolutely topple the steroid industry, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
the supplement industry. It's interesting nonetheless. It's the sort of research that is exciting to be doing, but they say themselves it does not directly correlate to how they're going to stop astronauts from losing muscle, but... It's a start, and it's one of these important steps that will inform lots of decisions in the future. And it's proof that, you know, changing the mice's DNA in that way does work. So that's interesting. We'll see how that goes.
Nice one. We'll keep us up to date on the space mice, of course. But yeah, totally interesting, that one. Let's move on to our final segment, as always, YouTube recommendations. And I have actually got mine prepared... I was trying to think of something more interesting to say than pre-cooked, pre-baked. there's a moth in my face. Anyway, I didn't do my little weekly update at the beginning because it ties in with my YouTube recommendation. So I'm going to recommend you a channel that is hosted by a lovely old chap called Peter Chan, who owns a bonsai tree nursery called Heron's Bonsai, which is one of the more famous ones in the UK. He does, if you ever go to RHS Wisley, the gardens, there's a really nice little walk with some lovely specimen bonsai trees.
I've been there, it's really cool.
It's great, love that garden. But yeah, he has a YouTube channel, and he's kind of like the Bob Ross of bonsai trees. So he has really long videos just like, oh, here are some interesting thoughts and pruning styles for certain species and styles of tree. And he talks you through sort of feeding trees, obviously the pruning styling, taking just regular garden center little bushes and stuff and turning them into bonsai trees. Really relaxing. He's very generous with his knowledge, and he's just one of those really kind people. So yeah, Bob Ross of bonsai trees. But I bought from his nursery a spruce about half a meter tall, and I spent the evening before I came here turning that into a bonsai tree. And it was great fun. So, you know, pruning that one, wiring and such. I will show my colleagues a little picture of my efforts.
Did you say wiring?
Wiring, yeah. So you get just a length of just metal wire, and you wrap it around the branches so that you can change their position. You leave it on there for a year or more, and as the tree grows, it will kind of keep that position. So it lets you arrange the branches. The style that I went for, he calls it sort of the formal upright. So the idea when you're sculpting trees like this is to try and retain the illusion of it's a full-size giant tree that's just been shrunk. So you actually want to pick sort of the thinner branches to keep rather than the really chunky ones. So in contrast to the trunk, they'll be they'll look quite good. Let me just pass my phone around quickly. There's my effort.
Okay.
I haven't done the pot yet because I ordered one that was too small.
I'm not quite getting the scale.
Yeah, because you haven't got anything for context
like
in there at the moment.
It looks like you should have some baubles hanging off it. And some.
That's what my parents said. I think I need to change the conical shape of it. I'm very, very pleased with that. It was quite a relaxing way to spend the evening, and my hands are still covered in sap, which is really annoying.
Is that particularly easy... A species of tree to...
That one, it's one that will be perfectly happy outside. It's not fussy in any way. So as long as you're happy with keeping up watering bonsai as you normally are, it'll be totally fine. There are some really fussy ones that need really specific temperatures and regular nesting and things, but I keep away from them.
Are all bonsais just normal trees that have been got at?
Yeah, literally, you just keep them small by just the pruning.
And twisting and wires and,
exactly.
and that type of thing. Yeah. So what about these sort of, you get these real old gnarly ones that are, you know, someone's been tending for the last 50 years or...
Yeah, know. What they tend to actually be is, obviously you can just grow it from a seed and it will take ages, but what you can do is a thing called air layering. So you go to a full-size established tree, find a nice-looking branch, scrape off a bunch of the bark, sort of all the way around, and just tie a bag of moss around it, keep it moist, and eventually that portion that you've scraped the bark off will start rooting. So then you can saw the branch off and just stick it in some mud, and it'll keep going as a separate tree. So that's how they'll do a lot of those. Obviously, there's still a lot of time before it will look nice and old and tree-ish.
Yes,
that's part of the thing.
You can go out and spend a lot of money and buy one from someone.
Or that. Or IKEA, even IKEA does bonsais.
Yeah, they do a lot of the ginseng ficus, ones.
Yep.
Those are really, really good. Mine's very happy at the moment. Indoors.
I've had a bonsai for about 5 years. It's not because I'm a bad person, but it died.
How could I do that?
I think it was supposed to be an outdoor bonsai.
Yeah. Loads of outdoor ones are sold as indoors and they just don't like it.
And I just couldn't save it in time.
But yeah, it's a fun hobby. Obviously, it's a patience thing and a little and often just sit and appreciate it. But no, that was a very lovely evening. Who's next on the YouTube thing?
I can go if you like. So mine also ties a little bit into my weekly thing.
Debatty.
My weekly things that I was doing. The week that I had. Let's go with that. So I've been watching a little bit of Sounds Like a Drum, which is a channel you'll find on the YouTube. It has 53,000 odd subscribers. So he's doing very well for himself. And basically, it's just one of those sort of, you know, how to do these things in explained in a really deep and meaningful way. The guy who runs the channel, much like your bonsai friend there, is quite generous with his knowledge, I think is the way I'd like to put it, if I may steal a phrase from you there, where I watched a sort of how to tune a snare drum like a baseball bat through a wedding cake. And he kind of, as he was doing it, it was well animated. He did all these little things where like he'd tap the drum and he'd do like those sort of cartoon sound waves coming out.
It's
very cool, like the sort of three white lines, very, very fun. And he would speed up certain elements of it in a humorous way. But in between that, he would kind of just talk, and none of it was waffle. It was all like, you could tell he's probably been a teacher for a long time. You can tell he's probably been doing a lot of studio recording, probably some sound design as well. And it was just a sort of very pleasurable experience to... I mean, in that particular instance, I kind of wasn't looking for so much a knowledge, more of a refresher. I was like, how do people actually do this nowadays? How do you get a deep snare tone? And it was interesting. Even some things that I thought I probably knew quite well, I was like, oh, that's something I hadn't considered. So we would thoroughly recommend Sounds Like a Drum.
Nice one.
Sounds good.
Does he do any kind of, I found this object, let's use it as a percussion instrument alongside a drum kit? Because that's what I would have thought from the channel name.
I imagine so. I think the name is meant to be kind of more like, sounds like a drum.
Oh, right, gotcha, yeah.
But I think there's a fair amount of stuff on there. There are various playlists, there's tutorials, there's like weird tunings, there are myth busting things, getting started, choosing drum heads, animal hide drum heads. So there's probably a little bit of product features. So maybe he does some weird and wonderful bits here and there. But no, so far, as far as I can tell, it's more of a tutorial thing but well worth a watch because it's quite in depth and quite good.
Nice one. Well, if you want to get nerdy with drums, sounds like a drum. Nice one, Luke. Telmo, Pete, fight!
Well, I don't want to fight.
Well, Telmo, you're first.
All
off
right.
You go.
On the same musical note, but on the at the end of the spectrum of subscribers, I shall recommend a friend of mine, Manly O'Connor. He's got a YouTube channel called Moments with Manly. He's got 191 subscribers, so he's quite new to this YouTube stuff. But his videos are so good. Really hilarious for someone that is a musician, like, I mean, you guys are, and most of our, I would expect most of our listeners are too. So he's got videos that the funny ones are like reactions to certain musical moments, certain musical videos, like drum solo reactions. But the ones that I would totally recommend would be ones that that he just kind of like represents. So let me put you into context. Me and Manly played together in a few wedding gigs. He's one of the most talented musicians I know. He's a piano player. He's an incredible gospel-y, in terms of like harmony, the guy just, he's super good. And he does, these videos are related to that, are watch what happens when a few musicians that never met are kind of thrown into the same situation, right, and what sort of stuff can happen. And one of them, it's like, watch what can happen with different types of singers, you know, like a singer suddenly comes in and goes like, let's play this song half step up or two steps down, and you suddenly you're shaking kind of thing. So this is the sort of videos that I really enjoy watching at home. I don't know if you guys watch the sort of reaction videos on YouTube.
They tend to annoy me quite a lot, yeah. I'll be honest. Some of the worst ones. There's some good ones where it's like, if it's a talented person being informative in their reactions, but sometimes it's like someone just going, oh, wow. No way. Oh, dude. And then they pause it and just kind of waffle. That I don't like those. So the educated reaction ones can be quite good.
Yeah. Well, this is the case. It's a bit more of a music theory, kind of nerdy-ish kind of way of doing it.
Critique, like he knows what he's talking about.
No, he just vibes with the tune. Okay. And he just goes like, whoa, whoa.
one of those
So totally cool. There's another one that's called A Four-Year-Old Plays and a Funky Piano Song for the First Time with Her Dad kind of thing. So yeah, it's very cool, kind of like easy neutral kind of musical videos, and I'll leave you with that one.
Nice one, Pete. It's your turn to round us off for the evening.
Right, this one's pretty straightforward, and it's sort of, in some respects, it's a similar theme to last week. It's basically the British Museum, who have their own YouTube channel. So anyone that's into ancient history or archaeology or anything like that, and they have many videos. They're all sort of tailored to sort of individual subjects. They might be focusing on one exhibit or one item, or maybe something a bit more structured over a particular topic, maybe ancient Rome, ancient Greece, etc., etc. And so in some respects, although they're not lectures in the respect of the Royal Institute that I spoke about last week, it's still another, and use the phrase, a great old British institution that's got their own YouTube channel, yeah. And certainly worth a watch. So that's mine, and it's literally titled The British Museum.
Excellent. Well, lots of educational stuff this week for you if you're bored and on YouTube. And to save yourself from scrolling through the front page watching just terrible things, you got four to choose from. That's about it from Pete, Luke, Telmo. Copious bats fluttering around our heads outside this forest border. And of course, it's all from me as well. Thank you very much for listening. If you do know anybody else who would potentially like our hotling, do let them know. Point them towards Rack Addicts After Hours. I'm sure we're on their favourite podcast service. We'll catch you, or you'll catch us, next week. See you later.